What do you think of when you hear the name Herbert Hoover? Hoovervilles, probably. Maybe Hoover hogs, which are armadillos, and Hoover blankets, which are newspapers that you use to keep yourself warm. Basically, you think of the Great Depression, don't you? Because he's the guy who was driving the bus when it happened. But did you know that 10 years before that, Herbert Hoover was known as the guy that had saved more people from starving to death than anyone else in the history of the world, before or since? And furthermore, did you know that he grew up in Oregon? Hi, my name is Finn J.D. John, and today I'm reading you a little something from the archives of the weekly newspaper column I write, called Offbeat Oregon History. If you'd like more information about this little podcast, or about the Offbeat Oregon History project it's part of, stay tuned. Or you can check out our online archives at offbeatoregon.com. This column first ran in the newspapers on May 3rd, 2009, under the headline, Local Boy Saves Millions from Starving, Becomes President. It's been updated since then. My understanding of this story has changed quite a lot. In fact, it became the subject of my master's project when I went back to school. So here we go. In the early days of the Great Depression, Herbert Hoover was the guy everybody loved to hate. The country was spiraling into a worsening economic disaster, and all he could seem to do was mumble something about needing confidence. As is the case with most such moments in history, there was a substantial amount of unfairness in this. But lately, with the country on uncertain economic grounds, his name has been coming up more and more often, and not in a good way either. The thing is, there are several things that most people don't know about Hoover. The first is that he actually grew up in the Willamette Valley. The second is that he is personally responsible for saving hundreds of millions of people from starving to death. The man holds the world record. In fact, he prevented somewhere between 2 and 5 times more deaths than Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, and Pol Pot caused together. Hoover's Oregon years started in 1885 when he was 11 and a freshly bereaved orphan. Both his father and his mother had died before they were 40, before he was 10. His uncle, John Minthorne of Newburgh, offered to take him in, so his relatives bundled him aboard a westbound train and sent him to the Beaver State. The future president was part of a strict Quaker community. As such, as his biography from the Hoover Museum puts it, he was, quote, put to school and the chores. He milked the cow, split wood, cared for a team of ponies on the Minthorne farm, while getting educated at the Friends Pacific Academy, which still exists, although it's a college now, George Fox University. When his uncle moved from Newburgh to Salem and started the Oregon Land Company, young Bert came with him and served as an office assistant there. His signature can still be seen on the title deed to the Boston Mill, a historic grist mill on the Kalapuya River near Shedd, which is now a state park. Hoover's time as an Oregonian came to an end after just 6 years, when he moved to Palo Alto, California to become a member of the first class ever to graduate from Stanford University. There he met his future wife, geology student Lou Henry. He never moved back to Oregon. Instead, he launched a career as a mining engineer, which took him all over the world. In the early 1900s, he and his family actually circled the world 5 times. This, of course, in a time when the best vehicle on offer was a steamship. During World War I, Hoover engineered, launched, and led a program to get food to the starving people of occupied Belgium while keeping it out of the hands of the German soldiers. If the Germans got hold of it, the British Navy would cut off his access and the people would starve. Faced with an alarming increase in glandular tuberculosis brought on by malnutrition, his Committee for Relief in Belgium actually invented a special cookie, which I have the recipe for. They invented this cookie to feed the children there, to get them the proper nutrition in the most efficient way possible. This cookie was made with gray wartime flour, which is about 80% whole wheat kind of flour, plus cocoa powder and a little bit of lard. To a well-fed Belgian child today, it would taste like lacquered cardboard, but to that child's great-grandmother in 1917, heaven. After the U.S. entered the war, Democratic President Woodrow Wilson appointed Republican Hoover as the U.S.'s food administrator, and after the war, tapped him to figure out how to feed the starving people of the rest of war-ravaged Europe. The American Relief Administration quickly became the primary source of food for 300 million people in Europe. How many of those people do you think would have starved without his expertise? How many Belgian children would have wasted away and died without his cookies? The number can't possibly be less than 200 million. It's probably much more than that. In his memoirs, Hoover himself put the number at 1.4 billion, which may actually be accurate, but I think it's perhaps a little bit inflated. He was, however, including lives saved in the wake of World War II as well. On a roster of world leaders who have been responsible, directly or indirectly, for thousands or even millions of deaths, it's ironic that one of the U.S. presidents to whom history has been the harshest actually saved millions and millions of innocent people from a miserable and agonizing death. Hoover may not have handled the Depression as well as he could have, but after learning the whole story of his life, it's hard to be hard on him for that. And it's interesting to consider something else. Would Hoover have learned what he needed to know if he had not grown up in Newburgh, not gone to George Fox in Stanford, if he had stayed in Iowa at his father's blacksmith shop? Maybe not. His stony, uncaring reputation to the contrary, Herbert Hoover is a former Oregonian our state can and should be proud to claim. Here's a personal note. I initially wrote this column after I had just discovered the untold Herbert Hoover story. I posted it to the internet and forgot about it until 2012. The original contained a couple factual errors introduced by the source I was working with. In the years since then, I found that an awful lot of source materials about Hoover are factually inaccurate. Put simply, the man was a powerful political symbol, and historical coverage tends to be informed largely by whether the author approves or disapproves of what Hoover has come to represent, which ironically is something considerably different from what he originally actually endorsed. If your interest has been piqued and you'd like to find out more, I can enthusiastically recommend Martin Fossild, David Hinshaw, and Lee Nash. Hoover's own memoirs are also surprisingly fun to read, although not always entirely accurate. If you're up for a more scholarly treatment, Joan Hoff Wilson and George Nash are excellent. Should you run across William Leuchtenberg's slim 2009 biographical sketch, can I just tell you that I hate it? It's overtly and shamelessly hostile. It's sketchily and unprofessionally sourced, and it reads like a political hit piece. I have trouble believing that a legitimate scholar, as Leuchtenberg is reputed to be, is responsible for it, because really it is not a work of scholarship, although it purports to be one. Along the same lines, I suggest not bothering with any of the dozens of presidential series books which you'll find in the usual places, at middle school libraries and places like that. You'll find in them the opposite problem from that posed by Leuchtenberg, that is, most are fawning and uncritical and pass on disputed anecdotes as proven facts. Also, if you're ever in Newburgh, be sure and check out the Hoover Minthorn House. It's a fascinating museum that's one of the only bits of evidence of Hoover's life in Oregon. The offices of the Oregon Land Company in Salem and the house that Hoover lived in while he was in Salem have been repurposed for other things. You've been listening to an Offbeat Oregon History Archive column. If you'd like more, there are hundreds of columns going back to 2008 on our website at offbeatoregon.com. You can also subscribe to receive these podcasts or their written equivalents and have them delivered directly to your smartphone via RSS or iTunes. If you're interested in history geekery, be sure to check out the Facebook and Twitter feeds as well. If you're ever in Corvallis and have time for a cup of Dutch Bros or some other historical Oregon drink, come look me up. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. All my stuff is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. That means if you want to broadcast anything on your radio show, reprint anything in your blog or book project, or use any Offbeat Oregon anything in any way, commercial or not, go for it. Some restrictions apply. Google Creative Commons 3.0 and it'll give you all the details. Have a great day.